This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Oh, it was intentional. Ken is a filthy, dirty kick to the back of the leg. You can't see it on the program feed, but you take the blue line feed and you zoom in. He went after the back of his leg. Could have cut his tillies. It could end the man's career. It's an absolutely filthy, disgusting hit.
From back in the play-in series, there's Paul Maurice. I still love that clip, so anytime I have an opportunity to use it, I'm going to keep using it, talking about Matthew Tkachuk's hit on Mark Scheifele. Mark Scheifele announcing that he's 100% recovered. No question about it. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, Universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're off to a rollicking start on this Saturday morning as Ezzy just spilled coffee right solidly directly onto his computer. Will that computer continue to work for the next 3 hours? Only time will tell, but we will be sure to give you breaking news updates on Ezzy's computer. That's off to a good start this morning there, buddy.
No, by the way, the computer is starting. Is that an IC first? I don't think I've ever actually spilled computer on the keyboard. I've spilled coffee all over myself, but never directly on my keyboard, so...
I think I spilled on your keyboard one time.
One time?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Well, it's hard to believe it's only been one time in you know, over 10 years, because I would think that would be almost a weekly occurrence with with this group. But we digress, and I say good morning to you, gentlemen. I am, of course, Drew Mandel, your host of this fine radio program. The man across from me, socially distanced away, is Mr. Ginsburg, Ezra Ginsburg. The man on my right, Dave Minuk. Gentlemen, good to see you on this Saturday morning, a nice, bright, sunshiny Saturday morning, the 7th of November in the year, the never-ending year, 2020.
Yeah, by the way, this Mac is pretty awesome because it's working fine, even though I spilled. And just for the listeners out there, it's not like I spilled coffee on this computer like 20 minutes ago. This happened literally as we were coming on air.
Yeah.
So this happened like 2 minutes ago, but everything's all good. Yeah, boys, how's it going?
Doing great. I haven't spilled coffee on my computer, so that's
doing better than me, I guess.
Doing better than you. Yeah, no question about that. Dave, nice to see you on this Saturday morning.
Yeah, feeling good. Took a little day for my little me day yesterday. Went out to Lake of the Woods, did some fishing and hiking. And
a little bit of yoga in the woods there?
No yoga.
No yoga?
Too busy.
Little meditation?
No, I don't meditate. I just run around the woods. So.
Okay, well, whatever it takes for your mental health,
Nothing better than getting out into the woods, breathing that fresh air.
There you go. Glad to hear you enjoyed it. So let's start with that clip and the news off the top from Mark Scheifele in an interview earlier this week with Tim Campbell. Winnipeg Jets fans can certainly take a big sigh of relief here, a big breath of relief in that he has declared himself 100%, no questions asked. So, you know, any lingering concerns regarding that injury, regarding the dirty, filthy hit, in Paul Maurice's words, can now be alleviated. When the hockey season begins, and Lord knows when that's going to be, if it's going to be, Mark Scheifele will be 100% healthy.
Yeah, great news. And we haven't really heard a lot from Scheif, right? Or about Scheif, you know, since the qualification series against the Flames, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's all been, you know, Patrick Laine and you know, Connor Hellebuck around, you know, the time that he won the Vezina Trophy and other players, you know, RFAs, guys that have signed, you know, Jack Roslovic, obviously still unsigned guys. But, yeah, I mean, it's just good news to hear. And, you know, Scheifele is a guy who keeps his body, you know, in meticulous shape, just like me, right, Drew? So, I mean, there's no reason to, you know, doubt that, you know, he was going to fully recover. But, you know, you go back to that series, and I still say, if Scheifele and Laine are healthy, it's a completely different series. Mm-hmm. You take Matt Tkachuk and Johnny Gaudreau, or, you know, you take whoever, the top players on the Calgary Flames, Elias Lindholm, Sean Monahan. I mean, it's going to be very tough for them to beat the Jets, right? So, I mean, that was really unfortunate because you had that long break, guys. And especially when you're talking about Scheifele, you know, the top center. And I think you could make a strong argument, guys, that, you know, Scheifele is the most important player for the Jets. I realize that the Jets, you know, have an embarrassment of riches up front, you know, with guys like Patrick Laine and Blake Wheeler and Kyle Connor and Nick Ehlers. But, you know, Scheifele is, of course, your number one center, but he's also a guy that drives the bus, right? Like, he is one of your not only leaders on the ice, but he's one of your leaders off the ice. I mean, we know that. The work that he puts in, I mean, this is a guy, a self-professed hockey nerd. Like, this guy lives and breathes hockey, like other guys on the Jets as well, but, you know, probably Scheifele more so than anybody. So, you know, just good news to hear that he's on the right path, because they're going to need him. Like you said, Drew, I mean, this is something that I think we're going to talk about more, you know, as the month of November progresses. But, I mean, these guys are going to have to quickly flip the switch and get ready to to go for training camp, even though training camp might be longer, Dave. Mm-hmm. I mean, these guys are going to have to go from, you know, training in facilities, you know, informal skates. They're going to have to go from that to a training camp, and then a season is going to start shortly after that. So they're going to have to turn it up. And I'm not saying that any of these guys on the Jets aren't going to be able to do that. They all will be able to do that, especially some of the guys, you know, that have been getting into some game action or maybe training a little bit longer than other guys. But a guy like Scheifele, I mean, they're going to need him, you know, as soon as the season starts.
Let me jump in there. So, you know, Mark Scheifele, we know what he is, you know, for the most part as a player. Certainly on the offensive side of the game, mm-hmm. we know what he is. Do the Jets, you know, given the season they had last year and given their still significant question marks when it comes to their back end, do the Jets need more from Mark Scheifele in all ends of the ice than they've seen really throughout his career at this point in time? Is this the year where Mark Scheifele needs to, if he can, and I think there's a big question if he actually can, you know, is this the year where he needs to become a more well-rounded player than strictly an offensively inclined player?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm assuming that's a rhetorical question at this point, Drew.
It is a little rhetorical, but I mean, you know, almost like, remember how Steve Yzerman early in his career was always sort of offense,
yep.
And then Scotty Bowman basically went to Steve Yzerman and said, look, for this team to get to the upper echelon, this team to be a true Stanley Cup winner and contender year in, year out, you need to play at all ends of the ice, and you need to be effective, if not dominant, at all ends of the ice. So, you know, does that need to be Mark Scheifele's mindset when this season begins, if this season begins?
Absolutely. I mean, there's no question that Mark Scheifele has elite offensive ability, but the defensive zone is not elite. And, you know, I heard Paul and Rick talking about it on the afternoon ride this week, and they said, you know, I think it was Paul saying that if you want to be considered an upper echelon, if you want to be a top 10, top 5 center in the NHL, because we know Mark Scheifele, you know, he's an elite athlete. He wants to be considered in that elite category.
Mm-hmm.
But in order to do so, you have to be elite in all facets of the game. You can't just be elite in one.
And I think, you know, something that needs to be brought up, even though, you know, it's a year and a half from now, Scheifele's a guy that could make Team Canada at the 2022 Olympics,
exactly,
right?
Where I was going to go.
Like, it's going to be hard because, obviously, you know, the guys that, you know, Hockey Canada can choose from at center, I mean, you know, Scheifele's competing against a lot of other guys. But look at the last two teams that won the Stanley Cup, right? And you've got Ryan O'Reilly, Braden Point, and I would throw in Anthony Cirelli. I'm talking centers up the middle,
mm-hmm.
guys that have really controlled, you know, parts of the playoffs, and especially Point and O'Reilly, who, you know, Point could have easily won, you know, the Conn Smythe, had been obviously won it. But, I mean, I think, you know, Dave makes a good point. I mean, Scheifele was on pace to shatter his, not shatter, but he probably would have had, you know, closer to 90 points
mm-hmm.
if the season would have finished. Obviously, he was a point-per-game player, but the point I'm trying to make is the offensive game, you know it's going to be there. I mean, he's a consistent 80, 85-point guy. He might even get higher than that. But I think, you know, that defensive part of the game, it's not that it's bad. That's not at all what we're saying, but he's the type of player, this is a guy who thinks offense first. And I think that is a mindset, and I think Drew makes a really good point. You know, I hate to give Drew credit for making a good point here.
Yeah,
but
anything at all, really.
You know, you look at Scheifele, you know, how old is he now? 27 years old? I mean, he's still young enough that's a part of his game that he can incorporate more, and I think that's what, you know, there's a lot of talk here, you know, in Winnipeg about, you know, Paul Stastny and, you know, was that move enough, you know, to get them back to 2018, everything like that. One player is not going to, you know, turn a team into a Western Conference finalist. He's going to help big time.
Mm-hmm.
But I think one of the keys to next season is going to be more of a commitment to team defense from some of those players that are more offensively inclined. I would throw a guy like Kyle Connor. Like,
absolutely.
Look at Kyle. Like, Kyle Connor was going to hit 40 goals. He's an awesome offensive player. Like, he's, you know, guaranteed 35 to 30, 45 goals probably for the next, I don't know, 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's an elite goal scorer. But you look at his advanced stats, and his defensive impact on the game is not great. Like, and we've watched these games, guys, over the years. Like, it's fairly, you know, given that there is more that they can add to the defensive side of their game. And this isn't anything, you know, that Paul Maurice and the coaching staff isn't telling these guys. But I think if you want to have more well-rounded hockey players and a better all-around team, there's probably going to have to be a little bit more attention to those X's and O's on the side of the defensive game, especially for these guys that aren't really known for that. Guys like, you know, Adam Lowry, Andrew Kopp. I mean, these are players that are more defensive forwards. These are guys that, you know, or Jansen Harkins. I mean, these are guys that finish their checks and they're known for, you know, shutting down other teams' best players. And I think that's something that we haven't necessarily seen from a guy like Mark Scheifele.
Well, I think you make a couple of good points there, Ezzy. And the first one is the Olympics. That you talked about there briefly, because, you know, that is certainly got to be in the back of the mind for any of these NHL players, the opportunity, because, again, they don't know when, you know, the Olympic participation has been very hit and missed, yep. You know, over the last number of years. So with the, you know, Winter Olympics coming up in a couple of years, they don't know if there's going to be another chance 4 years later. Mm-hmm. So these guys, and Team Canada has shown that they take players who they can deploy in all situations.
Right.
They don't take any players where they're sort of holding their breath, like, is this guy going to be a liability if we have to put him out in a defensive zone draw situation. So that certainly should be a motivating factor and a significant one for a guy like Mark Scheifele. And then to your point about, you know, I don't know that the Jets necessarily need both Connor and Scheifele to become defensive juggernauts in their own zone. But if you take that line, if you assume that the Connor Scheifele Wheeler line is together, and mm-hmm. for the sake of argument, let's assume it is. If you take one of those guys, probably Scheifele because he's the centerman, and you maybe bring, you increase his defensive prowess, and you maybe bring his point total down by 5 to 10 points for, mm-hmm. for argument's sake. There's more than enough offense there to make up for the fact that Scheifele might be providing less if he's providing more on the defensive side of the ice, Dave.
Yeah, and I mean, look, the reality is Mark Scheifele's got a contract for another 4 years,
right?
So he's not, it's not like you're saying to a player, listen, you need to
sacrifice
some offense and hey, you know, you're in a contract year, so, but we still want you to do it. The reality is we know that the Jets, despite the fact that they've improved, there's still some question marks on the with the defense next year.
Mm-hmm.
So the reality is, not just Mark Scheifele, but specifically Mark Scheifele, this team needs to improve defensively. You can't rely on Connor Hellebuck being Connor Hellebuck. It's not fair to him. I mean, there's a good likelihood that he'll still be an excellent goaltender next season. But, you know, you shouldn't just be able to say, you know, you never liked whenever you play any level of hockey, I don't have to worry about, you know, the defense because the goalie's got this.
Yeah.
The fact of the matter is that collectively this group, with the exception of, like, as he's listed some of the guys who are, we know are dedicated to playing that, quote, 200-foot game. But, you know, you don't have the studs on defense that some other teams do. Again, the Jets defense has improved and there's potential for guys like Ville Heinola and Dylan Samberg to step in. But, you know, the reality is, and this is what I always caution folks, the reality is you don't know that those guys can step in. You don't know that those guys are going to be ready for an expanded role. Heinola maybe more than Samberg, because, again, I talk to people, and people say, oh, Samberg's ready to jump. I've talked to other people who say he might need some time in the AHL. So people shouldn't make an assumption,
mm-hmm.
and this extended time could mean that he's ready sooner. But I'm just saying that it's not necessarily a bad thing. You can't make that assumption.
And, guys, Paul Stastny is going to help Scheifele a lot, you know, just in terms of being able to handle some of those tougher matchups, right? Because, you know, a lot of people, you know, talk about Stastny and the offensive part of his game, mm-hmm. but, you know, at this point in his career, I mean, Stastny is not the 60 to 70 point player that he used to be. I mean, to me at least, and I think you guys would agree with this, one of the best parts of Stastny's game is the defensive part of his game, right? Like, he wins a lot of faceoffs. He's a guy that he's all over the ice. And you're right, Drew. I mean, the center position is clearly the most important forward position because of the area that you have to cover on the ice and the defensive responsibilities, not to mention, you know, the faceoffs and all those other, you know, kind of details about the game. But a guy like Stastny is a guy that you can put up against the other team's best offensive line, right? Mm-hmm. Like his line, which we assume is going to be Ehlers or Lion A, or Ehlers or Lion, one of those two guys is going to be on that line. The point is, we know that most likely Scheifele is going to be on that top line with whoever the wingers are, right? So I think, you know, that's something to mention, that I think a huge part of the reason why Chevy went out and acquired a veteran like Stastny is because he's such a reliable defensive forward. But I think, you know, it's something that it's not easy, because I think if you talk about a guy like Anthony Cirelli or a guy like Ryan O'Reilly, clearly elite defensive forwards, like guys that were Selke nominees, Shifley's not that type of player. Like, he just isn't. And again, I want to, you know, just caution, you know, what I'm saying, because I'm not saying that Shifley is a bad defensive player at all, because he isn't. He's a good defensive forward. Right. But I think he can be even better.
And I'm not even sure that, I would disagree that he's a good defensive forward, but, you know, for the sake of, I mean, that's why it's talk radio. We can agree to disagree on that front. But I do think that that has got to be the target for the Jets this coming season. If Mark Shifley can elevate his defensive game, because you have to think that Connor Hellebuck, you know, it's unreal. It's not realistic to expect Connor Hellebuck to be as good as he was last year. Even if he regresses, let's say Connor Hellebuck regresses by 5 to 7%, which is not a significant margin, he'd still be a very good goaltender. But take 5 or 7% away from Connor Hellebuck's performance last year, without the Jets making it up in another area, this team is nowhere near even a bubble team. This team is going to be towards the bottom in the NHL. So that's why other players need to pick up the slack, assuming that Connor Hellebuck just can't be quite as unbelievable as he was last year. When we come back, more on the Jets, the most important development that needs to occur for the Jets to return to upper echelon status. We'll talk about that next. We want to hear from you as well. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, celebrating 10 years and 1 week on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Pullman in the corner, gets it off for Laine. Back in for Shifley, into the slot. Haenala scores! Billy Haenala has his first NHL goal. And fellow Finn Patrick Laine and Mark Shifley will pick up the assists as Haenala has tied this game up 1-1.
From about 13 months ago in Pittsburgh, Billy Haenala getting his first NHL goal in that win by the Jets. If you remember back to that, what was it, a four-game opening road trip.
The fact that that was 13 months ago is nuts. Like, I feel like since March, like, we've all been in a time warp.
I would agree with that. I would agree with that assessment of yours there. Anyways, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290, the segment of the program brought to you by our good friend Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. I'll defer to you.
I was going to say, if I would have worn my retainer, the space in my teeth wouldn't have been this wide.
Like the retainer when you were in like high school? Or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I had braces and then, you know.
Yeah. And if you had done ACL rehab, your knee wouldn't hurt constantly.
Or back rehab.
Any of the doctor-recommended things, then you would be in a lot better shape than you currently are.
I understand what you're saying. You're saying I'm in poor physical shape.
Well, I'm not saying that you're in... Well, I mean, I am. But, I mean, I'm saying you could also do things to rectify that that you choose not to do.
Actually, I was doing some core stretches before the show.
How'd that go for you?
No, it's good because my back has been bothering me, so I was doing, you know, some... some planking and some rib pulls and some, you know, downward dog or whatever it's called.
The problem
crawling
is,
cat or
the
crouching
problem is,
tiger.
The problem is you were at 7-Eleven beside
dragon.
Some dog.
No, he was actually eating a bacon wrapped butter when he was doing those stretches. So, you know, one step at a time, you know, a little piece by piece. Illegal Curve question of the day. We want to hear from you. Chime in on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us via text message. Send your text to 129090 in honor certainly in this cases in quotes, in honor of the U.S. election, what should the Jets' political slogan be for the upcoming 2021 NHL season? So there you go. We want to hear from you.
Paul Maurice's would probably be 4 more years.
Paul Maurice's might be 4 more years. Yeah, that's very good, Dave. Anyways, the Jets' political slogan for the upcoming 2021 season, you can reach us via text or via Twitter. Question for you guys. As we talked about coming back from break and going through the previous break, what is the most important development that needs to occur for this Winnipeg Jets team to return to upper echelon status? Is it Ville Heinola or Dylan Samberg filling in and solidifying that top four with that left side defense? Is it increased production from the third and fourth lines? Is it improved special teams? Is it something else that we haven't necessarily thought of? You can also chime in on that. From your perspective, what needs to happen? What's the most important factor for the Jets to regain their standing as an upper echelon NHL team?
Well, I'm here to make Illegal Curve great again. So I think I'm what I'm going to start off with is, I mean, we touched on it last segment, but, I mean, we know that the Jets are going to have to be better defensively as a team than they were last year, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of that, you know, has to do with shot suppression. And that's why I also, you know, as an aside here, I think it's going to be very curious, especially with all the time that Paul Maurice and the coaching staff has had. You wonder, you know, are there going to be, you know, system changes for the Jets next year? And, mm-hmm. and, you know, we're not going to get into the, you know, the nitty gritty details here, but, you know, you wonder if based on, you know, the way the season finished, not just the regular season, but the way the qualification round finished, and, mm-hmm. and you have to factor in those injuries, of course, but you wonder, you know, if the Jets do, you know, look at what teams like Dallas and look at what teams like the Islanders were doing. Obviously, you know, Barry Trotz is arguably the best coach in the game today. But you wonder, you know, are they going to, and they will. I mean, all coaches every year, guys, they tinker and they switch some of the systems that they use, right? But so I think that first and foremost, the Jets have to be better defensively. Because we talked about it last segment. You can't depend on Connor Hellebuck making 35 to 40 saves. You can most nights. But you can't every night. And I think we saw the results. Sometimes Hellebuck just wasn't able to do it, right? And I think re-signing Dylan DeMello is going to help. I think bringing in Derek Forbort is going to help. Drew, when you mentioned Ville Heinola and Dylan Sandberg, you know, I think you guys would agree that it's very unlikely that both of those players play key roles in the top six. Maybe later in the season, but to expect both of those guys to step in, and the Jets also have nine defensemen under contract right now. I think it's nine. It's at least eight. So I think most likely, you know, you're going to see one of those players, Dylan Sandberg, because of his age and his experience, probably has a little bit more of an advantage, even though I do think Ville Heinola is more skilled. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, we've seen that not only in the NHL, but in Finland and at the international level as well. So obviously if Heinola or Sandberg, guys, is able to, you know, provide them, you know, let's say 15 to 18 minutes a night and either play on the second pair. Like, I don't necessarily know that either Sandberg or Heinola has to be on the second pair. Like, I think there's this.
Well, they need to solidify. One of those guys needs to come in and solidify your left side of your defense.
But all I'm saying is, I mean, you know, Derek Forbort, whether he's a second pair guy or a third pair guy, mm-hmm. I mean, that was a key acquisition because you already have a guy like Nate Beaulieu that I think, you know, can give you pretty good minutes as a third pairing guy. But the analytics say Forbort is a good third pairing defenseman. But if you elevate him into the second pairing role, depending on who, you know, he's paired up with, which would probably be, you know, Minnesota Mafia member Neil Pionk, mm-hmm. I mean, that would probably be a pretty good, you know, deep pairing to me. So it's not just Heinola and Sandberg, guys. I mean, it's where does Derek Forbort, you know, fit in? Is Dylan DeMello and are Dylan DeMello and Josh Morrissey going to be able to, you know, recreate the chemistry that they had? There's no reason to believe they won't. And then, yeah, you get down to the third and fourth lines. I mean, I think Jansen Harkins and Mason Appleton, those guys have a good chance at having an increased role, especially if they move a guy like Jack Roslovic. But, you know, you wonder, is the third line going to be similar to last year? Or, as Dave Minuk has mentioned many times, are you going to now have a fourth line that's centered by Adam Lowry? And then maybe, you know, Jansen Harkins centers that third line, or you have some combination of Harkins and you know, you have Mason Appleton and then Andrew Kopp. Like, there are options here for the Jets. The Jets are very deep at forward. Nate Thompson could be the fourth line center, or he could be the 13th forward, or he could be both. So there's a lot of things here. I think, Drew, I've mentioned this to you many times. I think the Jets have to have a more impactful fourth line, but I also think they have to have a more impactful third line.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. We're discussing what needs to happen for the Winnipeg Jets, the most consequential thing to happen for the Jets next season for the team to return to upper echelon status. Dave, we heard from Ezzy there. What's your, you know, if you had to pinpoint one item out of the litany of options available, what would that be for you?
Well, I think part of it is their special teams. I think their special teams needs to improve. I think Kenny Weeb, who did an article, Can the Jets Get Back to Their 2000, and, you know, when they went to the Western Conference Finals, mm-hmm. he wrote about this, and he talked about it. He said, look, they were the fifth power play in the league when they went on that run. Then they dipped down to the 15th, and their PK was 7th, then they were 22nd. And look, we know what they can do on the PP. That's not an issue. They've got the talent. It wasn't great, but they've got the talent, right? So if they can improve and get some, you know, better, you know, again, when you lose Dustin Byfuglien and you lose that weapon, you know, I mean, and it's interesting because I was watching highlights of Patrick Laine, you know, and we were watching, you know, it was the two-year anniversary of the Global Series when Patrick Laine had a hat trick in that first game against the Florida Panthers.
Sure, the series in Finland.
Yeah, and Dustin Byfuglien had 3 assists to Patrick Laine on his hat trick. So I'm just saying that you don't have that same element on the power play.
And Jacob Trouba as well.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Like Trouba was on the second power play unit, right?
So, but you know, when you had Byfuglien at the top of the umbrella on the power play,
then
and you had Laine on his left, you know, pick your poison as to which shot are you going to take away.
Wheeler had options.
Right.
So, you know, he looked, and I mean, the reality is, and then he had Scheifele and he had Connor. So, I mean, like, that is just lethal.
And I think, Dave, another thing that has to... I agree with you. I mean, the power play and penalty kill can definitely be better.
Mm-hmm.
And when Andrew Copp came back from his injury and then they brought in Dylan DeMello...
Yep, there's
the
no question it improved.
I mean, we talked about that, guys. Yep. Remember last February, you know, towards, you know, the end of the season when
they
was
went
paused
on that run,
there.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, the penalty kill was much improved. As opposed to being a bottom five penalty kill, it actually became
a top ten or even top five,
right? So I think that's going to play a factor. But when I talk about the power play, and, you know, we've been doing this show for, you know, 10 years on this station, almost 12 years overall. And since the Jets have been back, we've talked about the power play a lot. And I think in addition to who's going to be the point man, which clearly, I mean, Nikolaj Ehlers, I've talked about this many times before. I mean, I realize there's the left shot issue there, but I think he's a guy that I would love to see in that buff role because I think he's a guy that can move around. But that to me is a bigger issue is the predictability. Because 2 years ago, the Blake Wheeler, you know, cross ice pass to Patrick Laine or, you know, whoever, or it was Buff getting Patrick Laine that one timer. There needs to be, I think, less predictability in the Jets power play. And they know that. I mean, Paul Maurice, Jamie Compan, these guys work on, you know, the power play, you know, a lot. And I think that they know that they have to, you know, maybe change a few things going into next season. But I think that's something also look out for maybe an increased role for Nikolaj Ehlers and just some different looks on the power play. Because when you've got guys like Laine, Connor, Scheifele, Wheeler, I mean, there's no shortage of weapons. Pionk, I mean, he's a really good player on the power play, maybe, you know, better suited for a second power play role. But special teams are always huge.
When we come back, Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press joins us for more Jets talk. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio. 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number one, Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined by Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk and John King and Dana Bash and Wolf Blitzer and I'm not sure who else, but it's a whole
Sean Hannity.
No, it's a whole menagerie of people
Tucker
here.
Tucker Carlson.
Stop it now. We'd rather have Tucker Poolman than Tucker Carlson. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can always reach us via text message. Send your text to 129090. Our IC question of the day is, what should the Jets slogan be, political slogan for the upcoming 2021 NHL season? You can tweet us and text us your answer. And of course, our website with all the latest Winnipeg Jets news is available at illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Winnipeg Free Press, we're pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Mike McIntyre. Mike, good morning. Nice to hear from you. How are you doing?
I am doing great, guys. Good to be here. You know, you mentioned some of the stars of the election. And did you know, I just learned this yesterday, that John King and Dana Bash, they were married. And they're separated now. They still work together. They have a kid as well. Wonder if that's awkward at all.
Well, I mean, I did not know that until a couple days ago. I think most people are just finding out that piece of information, and maybe it's a good thing they're in different studios. I don't really know. They seem to be pretty socially distanced. I'm not sure if that's COVID-related or if that's peace in the CNN studio-related.
Maybe she just got tired of his magic wall. Like,
you know, if we continue down this road, it can only get worse. So let's probably maybe shift our focus back to the Winnipeg Jets before we get into any more trouble.
I like where Mike's head's at right now.
Mike, obviously brought you on to talk about the Winnipeg Jets. And the question that's burning on everyone's mind is, does Marco Dano play a first line role or does he play a second line role for the Winnipeg Jets?
You went there. You know, I was thinking, is he gonna make the joke? And you did. Well done. I mean, what, third time the charm maybe for Marco Dano? Like, Dano and the Jets, they just can't seem to stay apart for too long. Very, very surprising signing. Like, I think we all thought when we saw the release the other day that this was something that had been sent from a few years ago coming out again. But, yeah, I mean, I guess, like, the Jets know Dano. They know what he's about. They know the person that he is. And I think all of us who are around the rink, we can all attest to this, that Mirko Dano's a pretty quality human being. Like, even when, you know, he wasn't playing either as well as everybody would have liked or as much as he would have liked. One thing about Mirko Dano, the guy never stopped smiling. Like, even when he was a healthy scratch, we'd see him up in the press box, always had a smile on his face, never complained publicly. I don't know if he did privately. It just doesn't really seem to be his style. So, you know, I think as a depth option, we know the Jets and the Moose, they lost some guys that they had on the farm last year. You know, those swing guys, right? Like the 13th, 14th type forwards. And so I think Mirko Dano is probably a pretty good candidate to be that. I guess in a perfect world, you hope that you don't need him up with the Jets because the guys that you kind of have to fill those spots are all playing well and staying healthy. But if you run into some injury trouble or somebody's struggling, you could probably do a lot worse as an option. So, you know, welcome back to town again for a third time.
Mike, I wanted to ask you about Jack Roslovic. And, you know, I know that you're, you know, taking a couple of weeks off and we want to get into those basement renovations, you know, in a couple of minutes here. But, you know, Roslovic is, of course, the only remaining RFA for the Jets. And, you know, yourself and Jason Bell of the Free Press reported that was about a month and a half ago that, you know, the Jets were, you know, possibly looking at moving Roslovic. But do you have any sense of where this is at? Because we were talking about this last week, and even though there is the possibility that, you know, a guy like Roslovic could be moved, it doesn't seem like, you know, this should be too contentious. Like, a couple of years should be the contract, and, you know, somewhere around, you know, I don't know, $1.5 million to $2 million a year for a guy like Roslovic. Like, do you have any idea that, you know, if a contract is imminent, or, you know, is this something that, you know, we might not know about for a couple of weeks?
Right. Well, it's interesting. Something that happened in New York the other day kind of piqued my interest just because of the links with Jack Roslovic. I think it's well known that Jack Roslovic and Brendan Lemieux are like best friends. And Jack Roslovic fired his agent, his longtime agent, and a childhood friend of the family, Ken Robinson, and hired Claude Lemieux to be his agent, his best friend's dad. And I think we all saw what happened this week where, you know, Brendan Lemieux was an RFA, and his ask, it looked like it was headed for arbitration. That's one thing Roslovic and the Jets are not. But Brendan Lemieux's ask was pretty high. And ultimately, they avoided arbitration yesterday, and they settled at, I think, 1.55 is the AAV, which when I saw that, I thought, that's probably right around Jack Roslovic's number. And interesting that same agent, you know, they're completely different players, of course, Brendan Lemieux and Jack Roslovic, don't get me wrong, but that is kind of the number that I would say as he is right in the ballpark. And so in that sense, I guess a bit surprising that they haven't found a way to get that done, because don't forget, I mean, just signing your RFA, that doesn't preclude you from doing a deal with another team. In some ways, it might actually help because now you've removed a task for the team that you're going to be trading him to. You know, now they don't have to sign him. You're trading the player and a contract that's already in place. So, I assume what the holdup here is that Jack Roslovic and his agent, Claude Lemieux, they have an ask of the Jets that the Jets are not willing to meet at this point as an RFA. And so we wait. You know, unlike some of these other RFAs, really all of them with the Jets that got done, I think when we saw the final number come in, you're like, well, that obviously wasn't a contentious negotiation. It's just, Kevin Cheveldayoff probably had an order that he was doing these in, and it was just a matter of getting around to them. I don't think that's the case with Roslovic. We're not going to see a 7.25 AAV on Roslovic, but I also don't think, I mean, he could ask for it, but I'd be shocked if we see anything north of $2 million as an AAV for Jack Roslovic. And if that's his ask, I think that would actually further expedite, you know, his exit from the market here. As for why a trade hasn't happened yet, I mean, I just look around the league right now, guys, and business has slowed to not even a crawl, basically a halt, right? I know the Oilers signed Dominic Cahoon the other day, but there are a lot of good hockey players out there that don't have hockey homes for next season. And it just seems like every team right now, they spent, you know, the money that they were willing to spend on free agents. Teams still have their own RFAs to deal with in some cases. And beyond that, nobody wants to take on any extra salary. Nobody wants to make any adds or deletions at this point. That could change, I think, as we get closer and maybe some finality to when a season's going to begin and what it's all going to look like. As for now, it seems like everybody's just in a holding pattern.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. Our guest is our good friend from the Winnipeg Free Press, Mike McIntyre.
You know, Mike, in the last segment we spoke about what the Jets need to do in order to get to that next level, in order to kind of regain their form. In your view, for next season, what really is the area that's most important for this team to get back to in order to kind of take that next step, get back to being a, quote, contending team?
Yeah, it all starts in their own end and in front of Connor Hellebuyck, to me. I have no concerns that the Jets, as currently constructed, are going to be able to score some goals. You know, the special teams, the power play certainly could be better than we saw last year, and I think it will be better. I think Paul Stastny will add an element to that power play, and I think the trickle-down will be you'll have two units that'll be a bit stronger than what we saw last year. Obviously, there's no concerns in goal, guys. I mean, the Jets have the Vezina Trophy winner in net. So goal scoring, goal tending are not issues at all. To me, it's all about the play in their own end, and that's where there's still a huge question mark, right? Like, you look at what's changed from the qualifying round series against the Calgary Flames. What do the Jets have differently on the blue line right now? Well, the answer really is Dmitry Kulikov is gone and question mark is taking his spot. And when I say question mark, I guess that's either Derek Forbert, Dylan Sandberg, Ville Heinola. In the case of Forbert and Sandberg, we haven't seen them yet obviously play any games with the Jets. Ville Heinola, we saw him in very limited action to start last season, and what we saw was very promising. But the Jets have returned more or less the same blue line core that wasn't good enough last year. Now, I get that Dylan DeMello was only here for a short time, and maybe a full season of Dylan DeMello, you know, working with presumably Josh Morrissey, that will solidify that top pairing. I just have major questions about what the rest of the top four looks like. We know Neil Pionk's in there. Who's Neil Pionk playing with? Forbert, Sandberg, Hanala, someone else? And will the end result be better than what we saw? That group's going to play heavy minutes against, you know, top players on the other team, and the Jets have to do a better job. They can't give up the kind of high danger chances and shots and all the metrics that they led the league in last year, and that would have absolutely sunk them if not for the nightly heroics of Connor Hellebuyck. So to me, that's the big question still and the big area that the Jets need to improve. And of course, it's not just an issue for the defensemen. The forwards have to be better as well of helping out in their own end. I mean, too often that was not something we saw on a regular basis.
Mike McIntyre is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Mike, one final question for you. We know that the NBA has their return to play agreement. They're going to come back for a 72-game season starting on December 22nd. How confident are you right now that there's going to be an NHL season in 2021? And if you are confident, when do you think it's actually going to begin? Because the NBA is ready to go, basically, and the NHL and the NHLPA, their return to play committee hasn't even met.
Yeah, it's a bit puzzling for sure, and remarkable, in fact, that the NBA has a return date already. Guys, they haven't even had their draft. They haven't even had free agency. And they're already, you know, next month they're going to start their next season. It's pretty wild. You know, I think this is going to get the ball rolling, or the puck moving, I guess, for the NHL here, for a lot of reasons. They try and emulate a lot of what the NBA do. There's some similarities for sure between the leagues. They share a lot of the same buildings, for one. They're in a lot of the same markets. So I think the NHL, first of all, I'm 100% confident that there's going to be an NHL season next year. But there's no chance, I say, that it's a full 82-game season. I think 72 games, like what the NBA is doing, is also probably wishful thinking. Put me more in the camp of something between 45 to 60 games for the NHL. And I don't think a January 1st start is going to happen, which I know remains the NHL target, I do think something by mid-January is most likely, with training camp starting right, you know, at the start of January, a couple weeks of camp, and then getting into a season where we're going to see, you know, a heavy emphasis on divisional play, likely going to see teams playing little mini series where they go to a city, you know, kind of like what MLB did this year, where you go to a city, you'd play a few games. I mean, baseball always does that, of course, but it was really divisional focused for what MLB did. And I think the NHL will adopt that to try and limit the amount of visits a team has to make to a particular city. Like, rather than go three times to one city in the course of a season, you'd go one time but play three straight games. Put me down for a mid-January start, and absolutely, I think they're going to play. It's just a question of, are fans going to be able to watch any of it? And I think, at least to start, the answer is no. They're going to be playing in empty rinks. Maybe there will be some U.S. markets that they would start to allow small gatherings of fans. But the hope, obviously, is that as the season progresses and maybe we get a vaccine, things start to open up in a big way.
Mike, just quickly, can you provide our listeners with an update on your basement renos and what paint color you ended up ultimately going with?
So we went with something called like a sky gray, and it's absolutely beautiful. We put it on the wall yesterday. I spent yesterday, as you mentioned, I'm on holidays here for a couple of weeks. So basement renovations underway, building a bit of a home office down there, and including a well overdue paint job. So yes, a lovely shade of gray. It's got a little hint of blue to it. I didn't like it quite as much when I first put it on the wall, and as soon as it dried, chef's kiss, it was beautiful. So I'm doing a second coat today, guys, and I think I've got as much paint on myself as I have on the wall. I'm by no means a professional, but yeah, it's been busy, but it's been fun.
Mike McIntyre is with the Winnipeg Free Press. He's a good friend of the program. Mike, we'll let you get back to the home renos. Remember, measure twice, cut once. Thanks for joining us, buddy.
You bet, you guys. Enjoy the rest of the weekend.
Thanks, Mike.
Take care, Mike. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Jets' signing of Marco Dano. Where do we see him slotting in? Presumably it's with the Manitoba Moose, but you never know what Dave and Ezzy are going to say. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
The decision, as everybody didn't have a lane to the net, Armia chooses to shoot from a dangerous spot.
So I've never had this happen before. Mm-hmm. I was preparing for the show and getting, you know, the audio clips together, and I Googled Marco Dano Winnipeg Jets goal. Okay. And Google responded with, "Are you sure you want that?" Never thought I'd need another Marco Dano goal, guys. I really did not expect that to be an occurrence, but here we are. 2020 has thrown a number of curveballs our way, and Marco Dano being signed by the Winnipeg Jets to a one-year, two-way contract certainly constitutes one of those curveballs.
It's funny you mention that, Drew. Like, every time Naomi asks Alexa, "Should I have married Ezra Ginsberg?"
Yeah.
It says, "Are you sure you want to do that?"
Yeah, that works for Alexa. That works for Google Home. It works for basically any of those home networking devices. That's the standard message.
Maybe John King can come over and bring his magic board, and he can tell me like what I'm doing wrong in my marriage. It's like, well, here,
Ezzy, John doesn't know that kind of time.
Yeah, and clearly he didn't do something right with his marriage either, because that's why he's on to a new one.
Too soon.
Sorry, whatever.
That's John King you're talking about.
Yeah.
It was the magic board and the magic fingers.
There you go.
Somebody had a great tweet about, like, when he's at an ATM, it must be like watching Mozart.
I saw that. I saw that tweet. It was very funny. Anyways, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Having a great time, as always. This segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. So let me start with Mr. Minuk on my right here. So the announcement comes out that Marco Dano has been re-signed by the Jets to that two-way contract.
Yep.
What was your initial thought? As the Moose guy, what was your initial thought?
I was surprised, like anybody, because, I mean, it didn't seem like that was a reunion that was going to happen after the Jets didn't qualify him following one of the seasons. And he obviously went and signed with Columbus. And then, you know, you kind of assumed that he would either remain in the Columbus organization or he would play over in Europe.
Yeah, because he's playing in Slovakia right now.
Playing in Slovakia. It's a town for Trenčín Dukla. I'm probably mispronouncing it, from where he grew up. He's Austrian by birth, but he was raised in Slovakia. So he's really Slovakian. And, you know, look, I mean, Marco Dano played. It's interesting because I tweeted it out. You know, Marco Dano played with four guys consistently who are no longer with the Moose: Logan Shaw, Seth Griffith, Michael Spacek, and JC LaPon. Those are his regular line mates. But you know what? He had a good season. He had 12 goals, 18 assists in 51 games for Manitoba in 2018-19 when he played, when the Jets had gotten him back and they played, you know, the majority of the season with the Manitoba Moose. He's a good soldier. He's a good player at the AHL level. I mean, the reality is, and I don't remember which one of you guys said it. I think it was you, Drew. But it's true. The reality is the Jets lost a number, or maybe Mike said it in his response to you, but the Jets lost a number of guys like Logan Shaw and Seth Griffith, guys who you need at the AHL level. You can't just rely, you know, especially when you have guys who graduated like Jansen Harkins.
A veteran guy to insulate some of the youth.
That's right. And so to me, it really is just a depth signing. He's a guy who, if you need him, he's familiar with your organization, he's familiar with the city, so I think it's a no-risk signing from the Jets' perspective, because, again, you're getting a guy who's more than capable to play at the AHL level, which you need, and he's also a guy who you could use in the NHL if you need him as well. So I think, to me, it's a smart signing because, you know, again, like I said, he's always been a good fit within the organization from a perspective of his attitude. He's always had a great, you know, Mike talked about it and in his response to you, Drew, last segment, and it's something we see. He's a guy who enjoys being around this group of guys.
A couple of years ago, Naomi and I were at Starbucks in Osborne Village, and Marco Dano walked in behind me and talked to him for a bit. That's the last memory I have of
what's the most random story? Yeah. In a show known for random stories, that was the most random story.
Huh? You know, we used to be in Osborne Village, so I think he was, you know, somewhere in that Osborne Village area. Some of the Jets were in there, but yeah, I mean, Dave mentioned, you know, Dano's a good soldier. He was here for, you know, what, 3 years. He liked the city, and, you know, Mike McIntyre touched on it. You know, Dano's obviously a guy that, you know, he'll play limited games, if any, for the Jets.
Right.
Like, he isn't a guy, Dave, that you're penciling in to play, you know.
No, he played three games for Columbus.
Exactly.
And most of them were for Cleveland.
So, I mean, this is a pro hockey player. This is a guy that, you know, you can call up. And, you know, he's skilled. This is a former first-round pick. And I remember, you know, going back 3 or 4 years ago, that was a big debate about, you know, should Marco Dano have an increased role? Similar, actually, to Jack Roslovic, if you think about it, right? Like, he was a guy who, you know, he's probably not good enough to be a second-liner, but he's not a great third-liner either. So, and, you know, Dave mentioned that, you know, he's put up some pretty good numbers in the American Hockey League. And, you know, I think a guy, you know, that I know Dave has been all over that we should be talking about as well here is Christian Vesalainen.
Yep.
And you look at Christian Vesalainen and how he's playing over in Finland, and he's got what, Dave, 3 goals, 4 goals in 2 games?
3 goals, 2 assists.
So 5 points in 3 games, right? And, you know, you look at that ice surface, and we talk a lot about it, like certain players, guys, that whose games are better on the international ice surface because there's more room. And you look at the goals he's scoring, Dave, like these are nice wrist shot goals.
Yep.
Like he's got a really good shot. And this is a guy that has all of the tools, right? Like, all the tools are there, not just the size, but, like, this is a guy that's got some pretty good wheels. He's good. He's got the shot that we talked about, but good offensive instincts. And a guy that I think, you know, is someone that you really have to keep an eye on, because Jesse Puljujärvi was the guy, Drew, that you had mentioned that could be a good comparable in terms of a guy that goes over and plays in Finland, gets his confidence up, you know, gets some, you know, goals and gets some assists. And right now it looks like he's probably going to be a point-a-game player for all of his time in Finland. But the point I'm trying to get here is Vesalainen has been a little bit forgotten here.
Yep.
If the Jets do move on from Roslovic, mm-hmm. you have to assume that, you know, Vesalainen comes back. Yes, he could obviously be on the first line for the Moose, but he's also a guy that might be an option, you know, on a third line role for the Jets. Obviously, you know, he's got more offensive talent. He wouldn't be like a fourth line guy, but
yep.
whether or not it's third line or fourth line, Vesalainen is definitely a guy to watch in terms of not only what does he do with the Moose, but, you know, next year if he does get a little bit more of a look with the Jets.
When we come back, we're going to be joined by Vince Mercogliano of USA Today. He covers the Rangers. Talk about the goings-on in the Big Apple. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We got more Jets talk ahead, more great interviews ahead as well. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined by Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuke. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us via text message. Send your text to 129090. Our Illegal Curve question of the day is, what should the Jets' political slogan be for the upcoming 2021 hockey season? Give us your answers at Illegal Curve or via text message. And, of course, our website that's got the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio, that's available at illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From USA Today, he covers the New York Rangers. We're pleased to welcome to the program Vince Mercogliano. Vince, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us. How are you?
Good morning, fellas. I'm doing well. How's everybody else doing?
Hey, we're doing fine and dandy here in Winnipeg. Pleased that you're able to make time for us this morning. Thank you, Vince, for that. Obviously brought you on to talk about the New York Rangers. And you know, I look at the Rangers and I look at their offseason, and sure, it was newsy to some extent, but, you know, I think it was more about sort of taking care of their own internal business than necessarily, you know, being a big player outside of their market, being a big player, you know, with regard to trades or free agency. You know, if you had to sort of describe the Rangers offseason in a couple sentences or, you know, a short answer, how would you describe what the Rangers have accomplished this offseason?
Well, there's really two ways you can look at it. I think the obvious thing that you have to start with is they got Alexis Lafreniere. So when you start with that, you got to feel pretty good about where you're at, especially when you consider the future. But as far as their, you know, 2021 season goes, I know that there's a little frustration among fans because they kind of wanted to see them do more to improve their roster, you know, right away for the upcoming season. Because as we saw in the restart, when they got swept by the Hurricanes, the Rangers clearly aren't a team that's ready to go on any kind of a deep playoff run or even, you know, start thinking about a Stanley Cup yet. So, you know, they made very minor moves, but the fact is that their salary cap situation was really tight. And the Rangers have so many young players who are eligible for performance bonuses next year, and they have to factor that in to their salary cap situation as they're kind of navigating that with the flat cap right now. So they were really limited as far as free agent signings. I know they looked into trades. I mean, they were hoping to maybe improve at the center position in particular, and nothing materialized there, which is why they ultimately decided to bring Ryan Strome back. So, I mean, you know, it was stagnant in a lot of ways. The roster is going to look a lot like it did last year. But at the same time, you add Lafreniere, you have all these young players like Kaapo Kakko, Adam Fox, Igor Shesterkin, who they're obviously expecting to continue to improve. So the future looks very bright. But as for next season, you know, how good are they? Are they a real contender? They're probably still a year away from that.
You know, Vince, you just mentioned Ryan Strome there, and, you know, it looked like he might be heading for arbitration. You know, he was asking for 5.7, and, you know, the Rangers were offering 3.6, I believe, so most people thought, you know, they would end up somewhere in the middle, and they did, you know, $4.5 million AAV. And the question I wanted to ask you specifically about Ryan Strome, well, I guess first of all, you know, what did you think of that deal? Were you surprised that he didn't go to arbitration? And do you think he's going to have a similar role, of course, centering that line with Artemi Panarin and Jesper Fass? I know there's been some, you know, criticism that, you know, the career numbers for Ryan Strome, that's just a huge byproduct of playing for Artemi Panarin, which I don't think is unfair. But is that the similar line that you're expecting to see, you know, when the season starts eventually?
I think to start, that will be what they go into training camp with. You know, it will be Panarin, it will be Strome. They lost Jesper Fast to the Hurricanes in free agency. He was the right winger on that line.
Oh, right,
line.
I forgot about that, sorry.
No, yeah, of course, no, it's fine. I think that they most likely give Kako a chance to get into the top six and play the right wing on that line. That would be my guess just for how they start training camp. I do think that we saw this offseason that, you know, the Rangers were obviously happy with the breakout season from Strome, but they're still not sold that he's their long-term answer as their second-line center behind Mika Zibanejad, who clearly, I think, has proven that he is a capable top-line center. So, you know, I think what they were kind of wrestling with a little bit this offseason, and that's why, if you know, we were paying close attention to it leading into the draft, the Rangers extended qualifying offers to most of their restricted free agents. But they actually waited until right up until the deadline to extend one to Strome. And I later asked Jeff Gorton about it, the general manager, and he admitted that they were exploring trades that involved Ryan Strome. So that just tells you that, you know, they didn't want to give him anything long term, but they also ultimately did extend the qualifying offer, because when you look at the free agent market right now, I don't know if there's a center out there, especially when you look at the production from last season, that you would argue is better than Strome. I mean, Strome put up 59 points. I don't think any centers on the free agent market did that. So ultimately, they decided to keep him on a two-year deal. I think that was a smart move on their part, because it doesn't leave a gaping hole in your lineup for now, but it still gives you long-term flexibility if the Rangers next offseason or any time in the future are able to go out and acquire what they consider to be a higher-level center. And I would also note quickly that they are hopeful that Philip Hedel, who played mostly on the third line last year and was a first-round pick from a couple of years ago, will develop and maybe could eventually push Strome in that role as well.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. Our guest is Vince Mercogliano. He covers the New York Rangers for USA Today.
No, Vince, about 200 years ago when the Jets and the Rangers made their trade to send Jacob Trouba for Neil Pionk in the first round pick, it seemed, you know, Jets fans' perspective that, you know, folks were apoplectic, but now obviously a year later they've had Neil Pionk in the system and he obviously worked out fabulously for Winnipeg. The Rangers have Jacob Trouba. They signed him, you know, to that 7-year deal. They've got another 6 years of him. But when you reflect back on the year that Jacob Trouba had with the New York Rangers, how are folks really assessing his play for New York?
The fans are pretty down on what they saw last year. I do think it all needs to be taken with somewhat of a grain of salt, because Trouba really did not have a consistent partner on the left side all season. Obviously, the Rangers paid him to be their number one defenseman, and you know, there's no arguing that he played up to that level. You know, he had his struggles. The offensive production wasn't there, although the Rangers have repeatedly said they did not acquire him for offensive production. They have a lot of defensemen who are capable of that. They want him to be their shutdown, you know, number one guy in the defensive zone. I don't think he quite lived up to those standards, but I do think that he showed some improvement as the season went on. I actually thought he was one of the few guys who kind of held his own in that playoff series against Carolina. And I think the Rangers are hopeful that as he grows more comfortable in his role and as they find a consistent partner for him, which, you know, quite honestly, they still don't really have at this moment. They're not really sure how they're going to play that right now. They're hopeful that in the long run, it will turn out to be a good trade for them. But yeah, he underperformed a little bit in his first season, and they had, you know, just a revolving door of partners for him. They had him with Brady Shea for a little bit. He gets traded to Carolina. They had him with a couple young players that didn't really pan out. So I think part of that was he had a lot on his shoulders. And I think that he even admitted to us over the summer that, you know, that weighed on him a little bit and that he probably tried a little too hard, or, you know, it was a little bit of a struggle for him in some ways.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Vince Mercogliano of USA Today is our guest, discussing the New York Rangers and their offseason. And Vince, we know that, you know, Henrik Lundqvist's time with the Rangers came to an end. They bought out his contract, and he ends up in Washington. They're going to go with the young goaltending duo of Shesterkin and Georgiev. I mean, Shesterkin, we saw him here in Winnipeg last year play for the Rangers, and I mean, the word I would have used is dominant. He just looked so poised and so capable of being that number one goaltender. You know, how comforting is it for Jeff Gorton and for David Quinn to know that they can sort of seamlessly make that transition from the Lundqvist era to the Shesterkin era?
Yeah, it really is a good situation for them to be in. Obviously, Igor only played 12 games in the regular season, so that's a very small sample size. But he also was dominant in the AHL before they called him up. And we know he was dominant in the KHL, you know, during his time in Russia. So the Rangers feel really good about where they're at with him. They also feel really good about Georgiev. They feel like he can be a capable starter if needed. So having the two of them, both of them are 24 years old, that is the reason the Rangers ultimately decided to move on from Lundqvist, along with them, you know, being tight in the salary cap and Lundqvist buyout providing a little more flexibility for them. But yeah, Igor, I mean, everybody you talk to raves about him. And I think that if we're talking about the Rangers going into next year with a very similar lineup, you know, how can they get better? And, you know, the main thing is having those young players improve. And I think, you know, at the top of that list is if you get a full season of Igor Shesterkin playing as well as we saw him play in those 12 games, that obviously bodes well for the Rangers' chances next season.
Vince, we wanted to ask you about Jim Nielsen. And Jim is, you know, an Indigenous player that was from northern Saskatchewan. He passed away, I believe it was yesterday or a couple of days ago, at the age of 79. And obviously, condolences to his family. For those who don't know who Jim Nielsen is, he played, I believe, 10 or 11 years with the Rangers, over 1,000 games in the NHL. Can you just let everybody know about Jim Nielsen and you know, his history with the Rangers?
Yeah, he was a little before my time. I would definitely note that. But
yeah.
I know that the Rangers were heartbroken. I know that he was a beloved figure in the organization. They sent out a message on Twitter yesterday, and I saw a lot of outpouring from fans. And that goes to show you how much, you know, he means, especially to the older generations of fans. So, yeah, I know the Rangers were definitely, you know, I don't know if I would say shocked by the news, but they were, you know, they were hurt by the news. And he's definitely a guy that when you talk about Rangers lore, he's a player that quite a few fans bring up as one of their favorites from the old days.
You know, Vince, the Rangers had a couple of picks in the first round of the 2020 draft, and we can know what that kind of impact that can have on the youth movement within the organization. So what does it look like in New York in terms of guys that are expected to take the jump, their young pool of prospects? Is there a lot of promise right now with the Rangers pools of prospects?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, when I talk to scouts, most of them rave about what the Rangers have in their prospect pool. If you look at the various sites that do rankings for that sort of thing, most have the Rangers as the number one prospect pool in the league. Now, obviously, adding Lafreniere to that is the reason they stayed there, because most had them in that position as well last season. So getting the number one pick this year and the number two pick last year in Kaapo Kakko, you know, that gives them some top-heavy, high-end talent. But beyond that, there's a lot of depth that the Rangers feel really good about. Last year, I think they had 7 or 8 rookies break in on the team. They had one of the youngest rosters in the league. You know, you go down the line, Adam Fox proved that he's a very capable NHL player. I actually think that he was their best defenseman last season. Igor breaks in. We just talked about him. Kakko, Hedl, Ryan Lindgren is a young defenseman who came up and made a good impact for them last year. They traded with the Hurricanes and acquired Julian Gauthier, who's a right winger that they feel like has some upside with his size and skating and scoring ability. So they had all these rookies break in last year, but they still have another wave of prospects coming. You know, obviously Lafreniere tops that list. He's definitely, I think, going to be on the opening night roster. But then they have recently signed other prospects that they're very high on to entry-level contracts. Morgan Barron is a forward who played at Cornell the last 2 years. He was a Hobey Baker finalist in the NCAA. So I know that they're expecting him at some point this season to make an impact. Keandre Miller is a big, really mobile, skilled defenseman. He played at Wisconsin last year. They signed him, so he, you know, will have a chance to maybe make the roster out of camp, likely starts in the AHL, but again, another defenseman that they feel like has a lot of upside in the long term. And Vitali Kratsov is a player we should mention who was a top 10 pick a couple years ago, who has been scoring at a really high pace in the KHL so far this season. And the Rangers are expecting to likely bring him over at some point this season as well. And then there's a whole other wave of guys behind them. So I think what you're going to see is, you know, last season, this season, and in another season or two to come, there's just going to be this influx of young talent. And quite frankly, I think eventually you'll probably see some trades, because if all these guys pan out the way the Rangers are hoping they will, they're not going to have enough space for everybody. So they're really in a good position right now where they've acquired a lot of assets. A lot of them are going to impact the NHL roster. And then the ones that they decide, you know, they have a lot of depth at certain positions, they're in a position of strength to maybe look at some trades.
Vince Mercogliano covers the New York Rangers for USA Today. Vince, appreciate your time. Appreciate your insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Anytime, guys. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it,
Thanks
Vince.
A lot, Vince.
When we come back, Ben Hankinson, the agent for Dustin Byfuglien, with some interesting comments related to Big Buff and his departure from the Winnipeg Jets organization. That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
That burner in him is to say, you know what, this could be really fun to play at home and put on my hometown jersey. And, you know, I think the only way Buff would do it is if he's 100% in. He's got something to prove. He wants to win. And right now it's probably, you know, on the back burner. But we'll see. It's my job to obviously keep pushing those buttons.
That's Ben Hankinson, Dustin Byfuglien's agent, speaking on Michael Russo's podcast. Michael Russo, of course, of The Athletic, longtime journalist covering the Minnesota Wild. Has a great podcast, and he had Ben Hankinson on. It was a really interesting conversation in discussing Buff, in discussing his future, and in discussing his departure from the Winnipeg Jets. We'll play that segment of the audio coming up momentarily here. We really have not heard much. We haven't heard anything from Dustin Byfuglien since his departure from Winnipeg, and even Ben Hankinson hasn't had a lot to say. So any insight?
But you've got an exclusive coming out later this month with Buff, right? You were fishing with him and hunting, and
yeah, that's me. I'm a big hunter.
Yeah.
And for my multiple gun racks, you know,
my mom was a hunter.
Your mom was a hunter.
Last name Hunter.
That. Oh yeah, well, fine. I give up.
You totally fell for that.
I fell right for it.
You really did.
I don't know why I even listen to him anymore. Anyways, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey
Show. And I've got a nephew, Hunter, as well.
That's true.
Shout out to Hunts.
Yeah, there you go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at BernsteinsDeli.com. Bernstein's was, I picked up dinner from Bernstein's yesterday. It was fantastic.
Icy sandwich, I imagine.
I had that for lunch. I had an icy sandwich for lunch, and then I just had chicken schnitzel and latkes, and that was dinner. So
cake.
You had
a babka.
It wasn't the healthiest day I've ever had in my life, but it was really good.
Because other days are, right? You're eating kale and
when Laura cooks, she's generally mindful and
Laura is a great cook.
She is a great cook. Yeah. So last night I was responsible for dinner, and clearly what happens when I'm responsible is I go pick something up and I put it in the oven and I declare as if I've been
frozen lasagna.
Well, no, we didn't. I mean, we had frozen meatballs, though. But anyways, Bernstein's Deli, support your small businesses. I know I'm a broken record.
It's not a broken record. Say it as many times as you want.
Hang on. We have breaking news. CNN right there on the screen.
Oh, wow.
CNN has finally declared, they've given the projection with Pennsylvania, Joe Biden has been elected president according to a CNN projection. You can stop watching election coverage now because it's finally, mercifully, the count has gotten to the point where they're willing to declare Joe Biden as the next president of the United States.
I thought Drew was about to announce the Jack Roslovic
signing. I was a lot more excited.
It's a hockey show here, Drew.
I know, but it's on in the background, and finally everyone's been watching this for the last, since Tuesday night. You can now turn it off and turn on some sports on TSN or whatever. Joe Biden, according to CNN, projected to be the 46th president of the United States.
So what you're saying is stop the vote.
You can stop counting now. Exactly right. I want to play another clip from that Ben Hankinson audio.
Okay.
Where he's really talking about what happened with Dustin Byfuglien and his relationship with the Winnipeg Jets. Sean, back at the studio, if you can play that clip, please.
He won a cup and was arguably the best player on that team, including the cup run with overtime goals and creating havoc when the Blackhawks won it in 2010. So fast forward, I think he played, what, maybe 7 or 8 years with Winnipeg. And the last year, he broke his ankle or had a really bad ankle injury, and he came back for the playoffs to try to play some regular season games. That was in 2018-19 season, then jumped right into the playoffs, and it never was fully healed. So the plan was, after they lost to the Blues, a crushing loss, I think they got knocked out like a couple games straight. I think it was, I don't even know, I can't remember, game six, and everyone took off. So what probably should have happened is he should have, you know, had a surgery. Instead, the plan was to take the summer off, which he always does. He hunts, he fishes, he likes to take time off, and obviously trains, but showed up in July, skated a couple times. He complained about his ankle bothering him in August at our camp. Didn't skate in the Beauty League, took that off all summer, and then goes up to training camp and his ankle's bothering him. Mm-hmm. And he says, I can't do it. I just, you know, it's a 100-game season by the time you factor in. It wasn't last year, obviously. But by the time you factor in 7 or 8 regular season or preseason games, 82 regular season games, the playoffs, after getting knocked out, beat up, resting it, and then thinking I'm starting another season, and it was his 8th or whatever number it was in Winnipeg, starting out with a bad ankle, he said, I can't do it. He went and met with the GM and said, I can't play. And he basically put himself in a really tough spot. He's scheduled to make, here's the behind the scenes. He's scheduled to make $8 million yeah. next year. He had a hockey injury, but instead of going in and rehabbing it and having surgery or doing what we need to do, get him back on track, he just said, you know, basically, I'm not dealing with this. I can't play like this. And it's, he was so disappointed. And after going through the summer thinking it was going to be 100%, he just said, that's it. I'm done. I'll quit. And he didn't, you know, the funny thing is he wasn't being selfish because he's walking away from $8 million yeah. last year and $6 million this coming year.
Ben Hankinson on Michael Russo's podcast. Dave, what's your takeaway on those comments, you know, that you heard from basically everything he said there, the sort of the timeline of how everything progressed that event that eventually ended up with Bufflin and the Jets terminating his contract.
Well, I mean, it's interesting, and the only thing it's really there's nothing really interesting, to be honest with you, because he essentially kind of repeated a lot of things that we knew from last year. And it was what I was going to say, what is interesting is it was around this time last year that all this stuff was happening, all the machinations with Buff and the injury from the Jets and what we'd hear from the, you know, Bob McKenzie and that sort of thing, Darren Dreger. But what I find interesting is that he glazed over, to me, again, what I always find to be the most important issue that nobody ever talks about. Dustin Bufflin not playing in the Beauty League. Like, he just acted like it was no big deal, but he played the
season. And we should mention the Beauty League was like Ben Hankinson
runs it.
Is the founder
right.
of the Beauty League.
Yeah. So
for those who don't know, the Beauty League is a summer league where NHLers and I believe Dave, there's some non-NHLers.
Yeah, it's like
mainly,
college
mainly
guys,
Minnesota guys. Yeah, like American. I think it's mainly Americans. There might be some Canadians, but I think it's mostly
guys
American.
Based out of Minnesota.
Yeah, it's a summer hockey league right. that Ben Hankinson started.
Right, and to me, the idea that Dustin Bufflin didn't play there and is not like. Was he not injured? Was he injured and was he not well to play? And if that was the case, that to me is the biggest question mark. So what Ben Hankinson really didn't say anything that was super relevant, I mean, other than the fact that he spoke about kind of the timeline, but we all knew the timeline. Yeah. And again, he's not wrong. His client, you know, I'm sure his agent isn't happy, yeah. but his client walked away from $14 million. $14 million. I think it was 8 and 6, right?
So that's right.
$14 million
in actual salary
yeah.
for those 2 years.
Right. So the point is, you know, from an agent's perspective, of course he's not happy because he wants his player to be playing and he wants to be making his money. But from Bufflin's perspective, I think he's not wrong. I think he was done. I think he didn't want to play anymore. Did it put the Jets in a big hole? Absolutely it did. Now, and again, it's what we talked about before. Did the parties know in the summer?
Exactly.
The Jets.
Right.
Yeah.
And if you think about it, Dave nailed it. Like, if you listen to the show and listen to the station, because obviously, you know, Rick and Huss and others, KO, like, it was something that was talked about a lot. You know, Big Show should be mentioned as well. I mean, that was the key piece of information. Like, that's why we needed to bridge that gap. And if anything, Ben Hankinson is just, you know, confirming what Dave's suspicion was, that injury had occurred, you know, between when you know, the 2018-19 season ended, you know, in the summer, essentially, before the 19-20 season started, because that's the only reason why, you know, you walk away from, you know, as we said, $14 million, right? Because if that injury had occurred and he had rehabbed it, then he just goes on long-term injury reserve. And then he still gets paid because that's covered by insurance.
Right.
Right. So that was the gap that needed to be bridged, guys, during this whole thing. I mean, when we first heard, you know, Buff is quitting hockey, it's like, okay, that's curious because, you know, he's injured and then he's walking away from all that money, even though he's made, you know, north of, you know, whatever, $45, $50 million. Buff's going to be okay, you know, without that money. He's definitely going to be much better than I am.
Not by much.
So, I mean, that, you know, it's interesting comments. I mean, you know, I listened to the TalkNorth.com podcast as well, and what I thought was the most interesting was, you know, Ben Hankinson and Bill Guerin played together in college, and I thought that was really interesting talking about, you know, I just, you know, as a, you know, a hockey nerd, you know, just hearing that, you know, Buff and Bill Guerin and Ben Hankinson all went out for beers, kind of talking about, you know, whether Buff would come back and play for the Minnesota Wild. I love that type of stuff. So, you know, good job by Mike Russo and our good friend Anthony LaPanta, who, you know, we've had on the show many times before, you know, for that podcast. Just nice to get, you know, and also just nice to hear about Buff, because that's a thing that I don't think a lot of people knew, that he was in Winnipeg, you know, during this time for part of it. I think he, you know, went back to Minnesota.
He spent the winter months.
Yeah,
here.
he was in Winnipeg. Where
he's got kids in school. Exactly. I mean, this is his home.
Yeah, yeah. So people thought, you know, he was in parts unknown, but no, Buff was here the whole time, just laying low and, you know, doing some fishing, doing a little hunting every once in a while. And
it's a little cliche, but Buff being Buff to the, you know, and then we get to hear it straight from, you know, if you're not going to hear it from Dustin Byfuglien, and, you know, by it seems entirely possible that we're never going to hear again from Dustin Byfuglien. Mm-hmm. This is as pretty close to his mouthpiece as possible. Yeah. in Ben Hankinson.
And I mean, again, it confirmed, you know, what we thought already, which is that Dustin Byfuglien is 99% sure he's not coming back. I mean, he didn't say 99, but he basically said, it's a, you know, I don't remember the exact phrase he used, but it was essentially, it's a long shot at the idea of Dustin Byfuglien coming back and playing in the NHL. So, I mean, I think that's what fans were curious about, whether you'd see, you know, big number 33 wearing a Minnesota Wild jersey. It'd be kind of shocking, but.
And even though it would be nice to, you know, maybe play another year or two in the NHL and make some more money, I mean, Buff is making a lot of money in those fishing derbies, right?
So. for the record, his career earnings, $58 million. So I think he's okay.
I think he'll be okay.
That include the fishing?
That doesn't include
the
fishing.
Those are just his career hockey earnings. Yeah. I'm sure the fishing totals will be.
So that's $57.98 million more than I've made in my career.
But when we come back.
I think that, by the way, as you missed the decimal point.
That's right. When we come back, we'll do a Pacific Division recount, and Ezzy announces his candidacy for the 2024 U.S. election.
There we go.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.